Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts from 970 ESPN and Steelers Nation Radio, David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just a couple of Daves chilling, talking Steelers. Now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave. He's Dave Bryan of SteelersDepot.com, the place to get your latest and greatest Steelers information. And I'm David Todd of ESPN Pittsburgh and the Steelers Radio Network. It's Season 7, Episode 70. And Dave, maybe that's a good omen for number 7, because the consensus seems to be, and I agree with it, that Ben Roethlisberger needs to play very well in this game coming up Sunday for the Steelers to move on to Super Bowl 51.
Yeah, I mean, I look. If you look kind of across the internet, local, some local media, and of course in New England in major media, a lot of people are picking the Patriots, and with good reason, you know, I think. But Ben, obviously, I think needs a solid game. If you look back at the times that Brady has been beaten in New England, you're probably looking at having to throw the football about 32 times. You know, you figure that there's probably going to be, you know, 60 offensive plays being run by the Steelers, ideally. So that, you know, that leaves about 28 to 30 runs for them. The defense, you know, this is a Steelers defense that the first time they played Brady didn't have Ryan. Well, they had a partial Ryan Shazier. You know, remember, right. He played like 30-something snaps. That was the first
game back didn't start.
Right. Played 30-something snaps. Sean Davis only played just, not enough snaps to even count in that one. Artie Burns wasn't really the starter then. He played 30-something snaps in that game and, you know, still played a lot outside. So at least he was able to, you know, gain some experience, you know, that way. The Steelers defense in that game didn't do an awful job when it comes to shutting down the Patriots wide receivers. Of course, you know, Edelman got his, if you will, 9 for 60, I think. But, you know, the rest of the wide receivers really didn't do diddly. Now, Gronkowski is a different story. You blistered him, you know, for what, 4 for 90 and a couple of explosive plays and the touchdowns. So they obviously won't have to deal with him this time around. But I tell you, I'm a little more confident in this defense, David, than I obviously was the first time that they played the Patriots. And this is a Steelers offense that should be able to move the football some on the Patriots defense. So the question becomes, can they get over this the red zone hump that they had last week? And can they hold the Patriots down to, you know, 22, 23 points?
No doubt. And, you know, last night as I was sitting there going through the numbers and trying to get a sense of Ben's play and, you know, if there were any trends or anything to look at, the red zone stuff is something, Dave, that I got to say I'm concerned about. Look, the Steelers scored a lot of points early against the Dolphins and they were looking to grind clock. They didn't have a lot of second half possessions and they weren't trying to put points up. And then in Kansas City, we know that obviously, they struggled in the red zone, but it is rather remarkable that through two playoff games, Ben in the red zone is 2 for 7 for 0 yards, one interception, and 2 sacks for minus 15 yards. So I went back and I looked at his touchdowns over the course of the season just to see, and I don't think there's a big trend, and you'll remember, obviously, Ben did what he needed to do in the Baltimore game for that late touchdown drive. He completed some passes inside the red zone to get him, you know, to the red zone and then in the red zone. And then the touchdown pass to Antonio Brown was inside the red zone. Over the course of the season, I don't know that there's any trend to be gained. You know, 12 of his 31 touchdown passes to date were 0 to 9 yards. Only one between 10 and 19 yards, which was kind of interesting. That was a 15-yarder to Antonio Brown. 11 between 20 and 29, 4 between 30 and 39, and then 3 that were 50 plus. Of course, 2 of those came against the Dolphins in the playoff game. But what I was thinking about, Dave, and love to get your thoughts on this, is in the red zone, you know, let's say from kind of the, you know, obviously, let's say really inside the 10-yard line, obviously space gets tight. And guys are going to focus on Antonio Brown. And as much as I hate the fade, thank God the Steelers don't run it too frequently. He's not really a fade type of guy. You can throw the back shoulder throw or throw it to the pylon. Looked at, and the back shoulder throw was maybe what they were trying to do in Kansas City on the ball that got tipped and picked off. Le'Veon Bell can be split out wide and try to do some damage, but he's going to draw a lot of attention. And it's tough in the, you know, inside the 5-yard line to come out of the backfield and be in the play very quickly as a receiving option. So, Dave, who are the other targets? And do the Steelers have a legitimate red zone target when they get in there and space gets, you know, scrunched?
I think they have legitimate targets. I think it goes back to Ben Roethlisberger likes his guys college open. You know, and when you're dealing with space such as that, you know, limited space, you know, inside the 10 or whatnot, not a lot of space to work with. You know, they love to run kind of, you know, at times run that snag concept, you know, for about the 10 or 12 yard line or so. But when you get a little bit deep, you know, that's why sometimes it's a little discouraging when they do get inside the 10 yard line. You can figure, well, how the heck are they going to punch it in from this point? They need to do a better job of running the football down there. They have the red zone targets. They just need to learn how to use them a little bit better and get creative. I mean, look at the success that they've had with the 2-point plays, you know, for a long period of time there. So they can obviously punch it in. They can do so through the air. They probably just have to get a little bit, you know, a little bit more creative. Remember how they in the past they've used Le'Veon Bell outside and kind of got him some rubs, if you will. You know, that's the kind of stuff that I think you got to do. You got to kind of rub and use picks and maybe a spider two wide banana. You know, those kind of plays. Look, nobody's going to expect Roosevelt Nix down there. You know, that's another option for you as well, too. So, no, I'm not concerned about the weapons down there as much as I am the creativity and the execution by Roethlisberger into closed quarters.
Yeah, well, I'm with you. And I guess they're one in this. They're two peas in the pod of being successful in the red zone. Nine of his last 11 touchdown passes have come outside the red zone. So, you know, the positive there is that shows the Steelers have the ability to strike from really anywhere on the field, as we've seen here in the playoffs. That's a huge positive. And the negative is you go back to the last 7 quarters or when they finished the touchdown drive where Le'Veon carried it 10 straight times, and they've played 7 quarters and only scored 1 touchdown. They've scored a lot, putting up points. That hasn't, you know, scoring drives hasn't really been the problem, as we saw in the Kansas City game. Yardage, moving the ball, wasn't really the issue. The numbers they averaged in that KC game, just in terms of drives, were let me see if I have them here. I have them right in front of me somewhere. The yardage per drive effectively is, you know, they were, put it this way, they were able to move the ball in every drive they had against the Chiefs, and they were in Chiefs territory. They gained at least 28 yards and moved inside the Kansas City 40-yard line in 8 of their first 9 drives, which was essentially the entire game, but only got 18 points. So they're going to have to do a better job there. Let's get to the injury report, Dave. And this flu bug has been obviously a bit of a disruption is the best way to term it. You know, you don't know who's going to get sick next. And obviously you do the best you can to contain this stuff, which means don't come to the facility if you don't feel well. But it seems to have struck, you know, 8 or 9 guys. And it sounds like it might have struck that many or more members of the organization, staffers, you know, whatever. We haven't really heard about coaches. And, you know, anybody's notable in the sense if they're getting sick. So that's point one. And you just keep your fingers crossed that nobody wakes up, you know, Saturday and Sunday feeling terrible and, you know, badly enough they can't play. If it's the flu, I'm sure every one of these guys would try to get an IV and go, and you just, you know, you just gut it out for 3.5 hours and see if you can get it done. The other stuff, James Harrison missed practice yesterday. Again, he went full on Wednesday. I'm sure that there's a precautionary aspect of there. You know, I'm sure we'd both be shocked if he didn't go. The only guy limited was Vince Williams. And I was just – concerned isn't the right word. I was a little surprised. We knew Le'Veon Bell was off Wednesday. He was off the previous Wednesday as well. That's kind of standard procedure for a heavily used running back late in the season. But then he was off Thursday for personal reasons. And, you know, it just raises an eyebrow because Mike wants guys to practice, and you don't just casually give guys the day off. So I tweeted last night that, you know, not anything alarmist. It was just the only thing I said, and because Mike kind of downplayed it. And I just was surprised nobody was bringing it up that, you know, Le'Veon Bell had missed 2 days. There must be something significant going on. And it sounds like, Dave, I haven't had this confirmed from anybody in the Steelers, but there seems to be a well-founded rumor going around that Le'Veon Bell might have become a father in the past couple of days.
Yeah, that started yesterday, probably a couple of hours after the injury report came out, started pick up. I don't know whether or not it's true, but it wouldn't surprise me if that's what it is. If you look at Le'Veon Bell's timeline from last night, you know, blessed day, so. I don't think anything negative happened to him, whatever the situation was. So, you know, maybe he did become a father for the first time. And, you know, I guess that's good of reason as anything to miss a Thursday practice before a AFC championship game. You know, this is a guy, look, I mean, it's not like he – you know, he has talked, I think, this past week about how practice is the hardest – the hardest portion of what he does during the week, not the games. So, you know, he should have the playbook down. The Steelers are, you know what to expect from him already. I'm not viewing this as a big deal whatsoever. I mean, hopefully he can go through. What do they usually do? A half speed walkthrough or something on Friday. So, you know, if he's able to, you know, get some details down on Friday, shouldn't be an issue.
Yeah. I agree. Shouldn't be an issue at all. And so it looks like, Dave, you know, Ricardo Mathers going full, Fitz Toussaint going full, but Fitz, just like Ladarius Green, hasn't been cleared from protocol officially yet. I would expect that to happen either, you know, sometime today or after practice today, but good sign for him. You know, Ricardo Mathers will definitely get the hat over Johnny Maxey if he continues to go full and they're figuring out who to sit and who to dress. It'll be interesting to see what happens with the kick return duties. And then the not great news is, you know, Ladarius Green gets to, you know, be at least limited in his involvement on Wednesday. And then the hope is that he's full on Thursday, and it turns out he's sick on Thursday. So I would be very surprised. More just because lack of practice time. He missed 13 practices before the limited work on Wednesday. I'd be surprised if he comes back in. Now, the positive news is, you know, if he's getting work in, there's, you know, it opens up the door for the Super Bowl and certainly makes it, you know, likely that he'll be able to play next year and the concussions won't be an issue. It would seem, again, we're guessing, but, you know, a little bit unfortunate for him.
Yeah, you definitely want a guy like that working. You know, I'd feel a little bit better about him missing on Thursday due to an illness if he had practiced fully on Thursday. Well, that of course wasn't the case. Yeah, I would be pretty shocked if he plays against the Patriots. Although, stranger things have happened. I mean, if he goes full today, you know, and gets cleared out of concussion protocol, which you know, I would think might be unlikely. But, I wouldn't count on him being there. And as you said, if they somehow advance and, you know, the Super Bowl a couple of weeks away, that's even more time for him to get himself ready. That's probably going to be the best case scenario with him. And, it's good that you get Chickalo coming back. Ricardo Mathers, looks like both those guys are going to be good to go as well. I mean, you could definitely use Chickalo on special teams. Ricardo Mathers, I'm not sure Ricardo Matthews might not have been passed on the depth chart by LT Walton at this point. But regardless, it's nice to have some experience depth there. So, you know, overall, when you look at the injury report, not bad.
Yeah. So let's ask a couple questions about that, Dave, in terms of the, you know, going back to the basically as we talk about the inactives. If you have a choice between dressing Jarvis Jones and Anthony Chiccolo, if you have to make a choice, Chiccolo's missed a month now. Jones was on some teams. I'm not sure exactly. He played 13 special team snaps. I'm not sure exactly what those were in terms of how the units break down, but they needed bodies on special teams. Interestingly enough, Justin Gilbert didn't play special teams other than kick return. It looks like to me he only had four snaps. What are you doing on some of these inactives? We obviously know two of them in Mihalik and Mettenberger, and if we let's just make the assumption that Ladarius Green's out, you got to come up with four more guys. So where are you looking?
Well, let's see. You already hit
Maxey
right,
is one.
Right, you hit on one of them in Maxey, so that gets you to four inactives there. Shabazz, you don't need him up, right?
Yep.
So that's five.
So one of Chiccolo and Jones.
Yeah. Look, I mean, before going down, Chiccolo was part of your punt, you know, your punt coverage team. So how happy are you with a guy like maybe Arthur Motes out there right now? Could Motes be the guy that's down? You know,
he could be. He could be,
you know,
and then maybe Toussaint stays down or I guess you can't, you're not going to sit both Shabazz and Gilbert.
Right. If Shabazz is down, I think Gilbert's up.
Right. So one of those two and maybe if Gilbert's not going to kick return, maybe if they give Toussaint the job, maybe it's Gilbert who's down. So one of those two and one of Chiccolo and Jones, and then you need one more. And who knows? You know, LJ Fort or Toussaint, maybe they're battling. Maybe it's one of those two guys.
Well, I think LJ Fort is another guy on your punt coverage team. So, you know, you're not going to rob that, I wouldn't think. I mean,
right, you're trading special teamers playing different roles.
Right, I don't think, yeah, and one plays on one, when you're talking about Chiccolo and Fort, I believe one plays on one side and the other plays on the other side there. So I wouldn't think that's going to be, you know, the route that you take there. So it's going to be, look, I mean, do you really need Toussaint active? That, you know,
unless it's for kick returns, you don't. Unless you're dying to have him.
Right. Unless you know that you need him out there on the kickoff return team, I don't think you dress him. And you know, Danny Smith said Gilbert did an okay job, you know, on kick return. Look, he got
I don't know what he was watching.
He got one to the 30, you know.
For those who didn't hear this, one of the funnier lines of the year was when the Steelers had the hands team out there. Obviously, Gilbert was the lone guy back, and Danny made had a long thing to say on Coordinator's Corner about how, you know, his one job back there is not to take a hit. The only way you lose the ball once you've secured the ball is if you take a hit. And he said even when you give yourself up, if you're not being touched, the ground can cause a fumble. And he went on to talk about it. Obviously, he's correct in that. But basically, what you want to do is catch the ball and go forward as far as you can and get down and you know, give yourself up and be touched. Now, he talked about running out of bounds and this and that. But basically, he's describing the play, and he said, we did everything right on that play, but the returner took a hit. And I'm thinking to myself, you did everything right on that play. Well, you had 10 guys on the hand team. Watch the ball go over their head. So they all did it right? I mean, nobody had to do anything but the return. You didn't. There was only one guy who had a job on that play. Now, maybe everybody lined up in the right spot in terms of doing everything right. But I'm just envisioning the grading of guys. Yep, you watched the ball go over your head. Yep, you watched the ball go over your head. You did everything right. These guys didn't have to do anything. So hard for me to give that plus play an A grade when the only guy who was responsible for doing something clearly didn't do the right thing.
Well, it's like he started returning that football up, and he said, "Oh no, I'm supposed to get out of bounds or get down." He just takes
run backwards. Don't take a hit now. I got to run backwards.
Right, and then he starts sharp turn to the right, and then goes down there. So yeah, that was a mess. But and look, things like that can cost you games, right? I mean what?
Think about it, Dave. If they don't convert, and I'll tell you, this was my level of panic, got the blood flowing, was if they don't convert, and you know, congrats to Ben and AB for doing it, and questionable coverage by the Chiefs, not rushing Houston on that play and some other things, but basically, you've got Jordan Berry punting from his goal line. You've got the most dangerous returner in the game, probably, you know, on his own 40. You're probably trying to kick it out of bounds, which means you've got a big margin for error now, where if he shanks it a little bit, you know, instead of getting the ball to the 40 or midfield, maybe it's at the Steeler 40, or you get a decent return and it's at the Steeler 40. And now all of a sudden, they've got – you know, more than a minute left, it doesn't really matter about timeouts. They just need 5 to 7 yards and they're in field goal range. I mean, the 19 to 18 was staring you straight in the face.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, I wouldn't have been as upset with the offense as I would have if a guy like Gilbert, you know, turns that football over in that situation. So that could have been a disaster. And I understand exactly what Danny Smith was trying to convey. But if he evidently Gilbert didn't get the message right. I mean, whose fault is that? Did he just
right? He said because that's how we coach him up.
I mean,
well,
what
you're looking in?
Did he tell him?
Mirror, right?
Did he tell him that before he went on the field? I mean,
it should be the last thing he hears. Remember, don't take a hit.
Right, right. And if he still did that after the fact, well then. Oh man!
And he didn't do a great job on you know. Then your grade on him is not very good. He said, you know, he did. Mike said he did a good job. Danny said he did a good job. I don't know what you have to do a bad job sometimes.
Well, what you know, knowing what we know now, here we are. We were hollering, wanting Sammy Coates and Justin Gilbert back there returning kicks. Now that we got to taste that last week, and we know the blunders that took place. Do you still want Justin Gilbert back there? Do you want a safe 23-yard line Fitzgerald Toussaint?
I absolutely want Justin Gilbert back there to return kicks. Now I know that I don't want Justin Gilbert back there to be my safe man. So if you're returning the kick to return it, yeah. If it's the last play in the game and you're telling the guy to get down or get out of bounds, maybe I want Fitz Toussaint or maybe I want Kobe Hamilton. I mean, or maybe I trust Justin Gilbert to understand, you know, hear what he's had to say, and he understands the situation. But I want Justin Gilbert back there to return kicks, to bring him out, yeah.
Boy, can you imagine if Justin Gilbert would have fumbled that and the Chiefs win?
We wouldn't be doing podcasts anymore.
Danny Smith would be
Alex doing it alone.
Danny Smith would be thrown off the bridge.
he'd be walking back from Kansas City.
All right.
Steelers Nation, mortgage rates are currently at or near all-time lows, and if you're looking to buy your first home, upgrade, downsize, invest, purchase a vacation home, or refinance, contact Craig Oxand at First Advantage Mortgage. A lifelong Steeler fan and Pittsburgh native, Craig's a nationally recognized lender that would love the opportunity to help out our podcast listeners. Call Craig Oxand today at 855-961-7763. That's 855-961-7763. You can email Craig at craig@blackandgoldlending.com or apply online at www.blackandgoldlending.com. Company NMLS 2551, NMLS 320399, Illinois Residential Mortgage Licensee, Equal Housing Lender. Okay, Dave, I've got a bunch of things here that I want to throw at you and see whether you think they're significant or not, and just kind of general thoughts about for the Pats injury report, basically Wednesday and Thursday exactly the same, limited was basically everybody, Amendola, Martellus Bennett, Brandon Bolden, Hogan and Mitchell, those are all offensive guys, and Hightower and Sheard defensively. The Patriots are going to be coming into this pretty healthy as well. Obviously, they, you know, Gronk's out for the year, but otherwise, it sounds like they're going to have most of their guys.
Yeah, I think Malcolm Mitchell would probably be the only guy. Trying to decipher a Patriots injury report will drive you crazy. So, just look back at kind of guys who have missed, and I would say if I were to speculate, Malcolm Mitchell would be the only one probably in real jeopardy of missing the game against the Steelers. But
With Floyd and the other three receivers, you know, he was down last week. I think you're right. He'd probably be tough for him to get a helmet in this one.
Right. And, this is a guy in Floyd that the Steelers didn't have to face the first time around. So, all right, throw some stuff at me and I'll try to.
Okay, let's get into some numbers and determine significance. How about this? First of all, it's rather extraordinary when you think about it, how many Super Bowls these two teams have won and how infrequently they've missed the playoffs, that they have not met in the playoffs in 12 years. I mean, I just think that's unbelievable that's been the case. Bill Belichick is 23-9 in the playoffs. And if you think about that, that's exactly 32 games. So that's two regular seasons worth of games. And that means you basically went, 11-5 and 12-4. So you get a sense of how good he's been against the best competition. 16-3 at home. Dave, do past records and success that the Patriots have against the Steelers indicate just that they've been a very good team and that Belichick's a great coach and Brady's a great quarterback, or does that in any way impact how this game is going to play out?
No, as much as we like and I like stats and what has happened and how the Steelers haven't drafted a cornerback in the first round since, those kind of things, I don't think it has any bearing on what can and ultimately will happen. Every game is a new game. How many times this year have we talked about, boy, the Steelers are playing a team, and the last time they played them earlier in the season, they didn't have X and Y and Z. And you look at the other team and look at it. This is going to be a totally different game than the one that, the Steelers even played way back in week 7. So, no, I guess if you're looking at it from a young player standpoint of maybe talking yourself into being intimidated because this is the evil empire, maybe there can have some psychological stuff there. But, just plain and simple, Bill Belichick's teams are well coached and so is Brady, and they win a lot more times than they lose. So I think it ends there. It doesn't mean that they're unbeatable in this situation. In fact, this is going to sound funny, but this might be the most beatable team that the Steelers have faced in the playoffs in a while, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think they're more beatable than Kansas City.
Is it most beatable or more beatable?
It depends if you're talking about Kansas City or everybody. Here's another one for you. So the Steelers in their last three road playoff games, after the Miami game, they put up 30, right? But you go back to last year and they put up 18, and I still am fascinated by the fact that their past two road wins have been both 18-16. And they put up 18 in Kansas City. They put up 16 in Denver. They put up 18 in 18 in Cincinnati. So three games, basically putting up an average of 17 and the third points again, whatever the number is. In the last six seasons, road teams are 3-23 in the playoffs when scoring fewer than 20 points. Two of those wins are the Steelers scoring 18 points. Is there any chance the Steelers win this game, Dave, scoring less than 20 points?
Wow, they would have to hit Butler's magic number of 16 or 17. Is there a chance? Sure, there's a chance. But
okay, I don't think there's a chance. Everything is a chance. But I mean, this is a 1 in 50 chance.
Realistically, no. No, I mean, unless Brady goes down, something significant would have
to. That's a good point.
something significant, I think, would have to happen in the game in order to do that, in order for that to happen. But not impossible, I guess, as I'd like to say, but very unlikely. But, however, you know, you go back and you look at these games. You know, I was breaking down back when the last time the Steelers beat or about to play the Patriots with Landry Jones in the games, in the 80-something games or whatever that Brady has lost during his career. You know, I think 22-23 is, or, you know, 18 to 20 is that probably that magic number.
Yeah, and I've said all week that the magic number for me is 24, keeping them under 24 for the Steelers. Tom Brady versus Mike Tomlin Steelers, and this is what keeps Steeler fans up at night. This is what keeps you and I up at night. It's one thing to be a good team, but it's also a different thing to be a good team that has continually shredded the team that you watch all the time. So you've seen it happen. You've seen the Steelers' defense not have an answer for Tom Brady kind of repeatedly. And we can debate, you know, what happened up in Foxborough for the opener last year. The Steelers didn't play poorly in that game, and they were in it. They were in it here in Pittsburgh with Landry Jones at quarterback. But having said that, you know, they're in those games, and the Patriots put up 28 without playing their best. So Tom Brady against Mike Tomlin's Steelers has 19 touchdowns and zero interceptions, and a 127.5 passer rating, the highest against any head coach, minimum three games. I mean, Dave, that's daunting stuff. Does Tom Brady throw his first interception against the Steelers in this game?
I'm not going to touch that one. It would be. I mean, obviously, it would be nice. But I mean, even look at his interceptions last week, right? I mean, were those really Tom Brady miscues?
Nope. I mean, one off Floyd's hands was definitely on Floyd. I'm trying to remember the other one.
It seemed like the other one was a tipped one as well, right?
Yeah, it was tipped by somebody. Yes.
So, you know, the odds of you getting an interception because Tom Brady put the football where it doesn't belong are not good. So they so need a stat for that, don't they?
I think the interception, that's not the quarterback's fault. You know, it's like they need more credit for the pass interference calls and they need less credit for the interceptions that aren't their fault.
And the drop passes. I mean, we live in a world now with Excel and a lot of math.
I think QBR tries to do a little bit of that, but I don't think they can fully, you know, it's fully, you know, how much responsibility does a guy take for an interception?
Right. And look, even net yards per, you know, or average yards per passing attempt uses the interceptions, you know, all sure. Interceptions. So there's got to be a way to drill these. Well, there is a way. It just and we will. The old quarterback rating, we all still like to post it in tweets and in blog posts when it's over 100 and this, that, and the other. But I mean, the reality of that is that stat gets more archaic by the day. It seems like
yes. As we learn more, it's yet less useful.
Right, and you know, some of these other ones are starting. You know, QBR. It'd be fun if they let us know more about what the QBR.
Yeah, QBR's just not totally transparent. It's a little opaque, and that makes it anything that's opaque is more difficult. All right, so let me give you another one, Dave. Ben, he's gone 8 games without throwing for 300 yards, 8 consecutive games. Obviously, the Steelers are 8-0 in these games. The last time Ben went 8 games without throwing for 300 yards was the last 8 games of 2006 and all 15 games that he played in of the 2007 regular season. And just shows you how much the game has changed and how much Ben has grown and how the offense has changed. He went a period of 23 games. Now, the playoff game against Jacksonville in 07, he threw for 337, and then he came out in 08, and I think he didn't throw for 300 yards in the first 4 games of the regular season. So it's something crazy, like 27 straight regular season games. But since that point in time, I don't know that he's gone 5. But he's gone 8 now, and the Steelers have won all 8. Is that a meaningful number or not?
Well, that goes again. We're talking about archaic stats, right? I mean, what was his air yards? You know, I think air yards it should be. Look what happened against the Miami Dolphins, right? I mean, two
112 yards of touchdowns where he threw the ball 6 yards.
Right. I mean, should he get credit for that? I mean, so once again, I think we're talking about a stat that it looks good when we talk about Ben Roethlisberger threw for 500 yards in a game. How many, how many of those were air yards? How much did he get yak after that? You know, I guess what I'm trying to say is I don't want to answer the question.
Okay, fair enough. How about this? I got just one or two more for you here, and we'll continue into the
extra. That sounds like a big cop-out, but I mean, let me put
this one's more definitive for you.
All right, let me end with this. I think Ben Roethlisberger needs to throw for right at almost 300 yards against the Patriots in order for the Steelers to win this game. So,
with Le'Veon Bell being effective. So not like, oh my gosh, they've gotten shut down in the run game. It's got to be Le'Veon Bell gets his and Ben gets his.
And part of, I think part of Le'Veon Bell getting his, though, can be an extension of the passing game. I think
they're hand in glove, man. You know, yeah, absolutely, they go together.
I don't think you can just look at this as I already said. Look, I think the Steelers need to run the football something like, obviously, running the football in the high 20s to early 30s is a good sign that you did something right during the game and you're not having to throw in the second half. So I think something like 24 carries, 23 carries for Le'Veon Bell would probably be ideal. This is a running back that had a season high 10 catches against the Patriots the first time around. As well, I think the Patriots are going to be kind of fine, if you will, in not giving up the home run big plays to Antonio Brown. And look, when you talk about and that's why I said 280, 90, 300 yards for Ben, because I just don't think a high completion game is going to be enough for Ben. I think the Steelers are going to need 5 to 6 explosive plays in this game, and on the drives with those explosive plays, they better be coming away with 7 on at least half of them, if that makes sense. So, you know, if you have 6 explosive plays in that game and 6 of them come on 6 different drives, you better score a touchdown on 3 of them, and the other 3 you better get a field goal or 2. You know, so you don't have to be 100% scoring on explosive play drives. And the reality is you're probably going to have a drive that maybe has 2 explosive plays on it. So essentially, I think the Steelers need 5 drives that include explosive plays. They need to score touchdowns on half of them. That's 2.5 touchdowns. And then maybe a field goal on another one of those. But I don't think they can win this game without explosiveness, because I believe the Patriots are going to – and before you get to that other question that you wanted to get to me, the Patriots allowed a league-low 32 runs of 10 yards or more during the regular season. Now, Bell had 2 in that Week 7 game against the Patriots, and AB had 1. Here's another interesting thing. I love digging through stats and drilling down even further. Eight of the 32 runs of 10 yards or more against the Patriots this year during the regular season were by quarterbacks. Well, I think we're pretty safe to assume that Ben Roethlisberger is not going to have a run of 10 yards or more against the Patriots. One other of those 32 runs was by a punter, and 3 others were by wide receivers, obviously Antonio Brown being one of them. So there you go. You got 8 and 1, 9, 12, almost half of their the 32 runs of 10 yards or more against the Patriots were by players that did not play the running back position. So they're fairly comfortable in stopping the run. And Bill Belichick has a history of focusing on trying to take at least one thing away from the opposition during the game. And if I'm him, if it's me, and I think we talked about this the other day, David, I don't want Antonio Brown to kill me. I can live with pretty much everything else as long as Antonio Brown doesn't go eight for 150 and a touchdown in this game. Okay, fire away.
Yeah, well, you and Ben and maybe me are the three guys saying that, and the rest of the world saying, well, he's going to take away Antonio Brown. So it's interesting to see, you know, what people – look, the answer is Bill's going to try and limit what everybody does. So I don't know that it's necessarily one or the other clearly, but it is interesting how you and I and Ben, you know, made this point on Wednesday. And for those who missed that and aren't able to get to the podcast, Ben will be on my show today at 4:30 on ESPN Pittsburgh. It's, you know, Bell's going to – you can't keep Le'Veon Bell from taking handoffs. So he's going to get 25 or 30 touches just that way. You can try to keep Antonio Brown from catching passes. So I think that's a more reasonable thing. And you know Bell's going to get 25 or 30 touches. You know, Antonio Brown's going to get 6 to 10 touches most likely. So it's a different thing. Antonio Brown's likely able to score from anywhere on the field. Le'Veon Bell is less likely, just the nature of the position, to score from anywhere on the field. So a little bit of a different psychology and approach, but I think it's a good point.
Here's something else to think about. You know, the Steelers have been running, you know, quite a bit of RPOs per normal. And, you know, Ben's got a – It's funny, the more you learn about this game and the people that bitch about offensive coordinators and oh, they shouldn't have thrown there. So many of these plays and especially the Steelers call, you know, on a weekly basis now are pretty much, you know, probably a third of them maybe are really kind of check with me and stuff, or even more than a third. You know, RPOs are really designed to what's the conflict defender doing? And if the conflict defender's in the box, then I'm not running it. You know, I'm not handing it off. If the conflict defender is not in the box, I'm handing it off. And a lot of that's, you know, even determined whether or not Roethlisberger is going to throw it or hand it off after the snap happens. Yet people still want to blame Todd Haley and these other guys, you know, coordinators around the league for bad playing calling. You got to love RPOs and you got to love creativeness out of RPOs because it really takes the play calling out, you know, out of everybody's hands and makes play calling happen after the snap of the football. So there's going to be about 6, 7, 8, 9 opportunities in this game where Ben's going to have to decide, do I hand off to Le'Veon Bell or do I throw the football? And I, you know, that's already shortening the game some, and you would expect to have a successful play success, if that makes sense, on those 8, 9, 10 plays. So then you boil it down to another, let's say 46 plays on you know, from that point forward there. So I think Bell can get and even out of RPOs, I think you can get Bell the football in his hands during the passing game. So, you know, it just so much goes into that. And yeah, I think Bell, regardless, David, that's the guy that needs to have you 150 yards in this game, if not more. If he hits that 150 mark, and he did hit, what did he hit that mark in week 7? He came close, right?
Right around there, 147 maybe, rings a bell.
Right, 147.
No pun intended.
Right, 147, 148, 149, right around in there. That's fine. He needs that or a little bit better again. We've seen, and look, you even had Brown have some success in that game as well. You know, 7 catches for 106 yards. He didn't get in the end zone, obviously. How much different would that game have gone had Landry Jones not thrown that red zone interception? They were every bit in this game, although the score says, you know, 11 point difference there. Boy, math down on a Friday there. But they played this Patriots team kind of straight up, if you will, and you know, they can do it again, I think.
Okay.
What was the other question? I just took you way about down through Alice in Wonderland.
No, that's all good. You know, some things on Le'Veon Bell. His numbers are interesting to look at. During the first six games of the season, he has 100 attempts, 433 yards, so 4.33 yards a carry, 72 yards a game. Over the last eight games, so double the amount, 220 rushes, so he's carrying it a little bit more, 1,172 yards, 5.3 yards a carry, 146 yards a game. That's double the yards per game. People know the numbers over the last 5 weeks: 20 for $142, 12 for $68, 11 for $77, 15 for $80, and 16 for $100. That's on first down. How about that? So in 70, he's had 74 first down carries in the last five games for 467 yards and a 6.3 yard average. I mean, those are crazy, crazy numbers. So Dave, do you keep doing that because you've been successful? He's not carried it less than 11 times on first down, and he's carried it up to 20 times in the last five games. Do you keep doing that because it works? Even though the Patriots, you know, I'll know these numbers, and they're going to maybe come out with a 5-1 front. They play that, you know, frequently. Or is this the opportunity to use play action early in the game to loosen this all up? What do you do early in the game? And as one of our listeners said to us, if you win the toss, are you taking the ball or are you deferring?
Well, I think if you come out and you establish, you can run or pass on first down just out of those RPOs and not put yourself, you know, in a hole, so to speak.
You're not going to run.
I mean, it'd be silly if you got a run play called and you're going against, you know, like a bare front or whatnot, you know, kind of a stacked box. You'd be kind of foolish to keep banging your head up against that, right?
Yeah, right. And you know, if they're showing you 8-man box, you gotta opt into the pass. And if they're showing you nickel and dime with, you know, six guys there, you fire away with Le'Veon. And that's what they were able to do so successfully against the Chiefs. Until the Chiefs made that change at the end of the third quarter by changing the front that they played, the Steelers just crushed them running against the nickel and dime.
I think we have to quit, you know, as analysts these days and. I fit the anal part of analyst very well. We have to just quit putting things in a box like that. Should they run? Should they pass early? You know that.
My question is this: do you expect them to come out and throw to establish the run or run to establish the pass in general? Look, they threw the ball the first five times against the Chiefs. It didn't really matter what they came out with, and we saw it in Buffalo as well.
I think the answer to your question would be yes. I mean, because I think it all depends on what the front presents to you.
Well, the Chiefs came out in nickel and dime, you know, in that time, and the Steelers threw it anyway. So that's just why I'm curious.
I tell you what, I want to try to get the Patriots' smaller package on the field. You know, their sub package on the field probably as much as possible, because I think I can do a lot more with that in the running game. So, you know, look, the Steelers didn't use a lot. I mean, the Steelers used a lot of three wide against the Patriots, right? So
right, they ran out of three wide, and that's what I'm saying. They showed them the three wide. They got them in nickel, and then as the game went on, you remember Le'Veon Bell didn't carry the ball much that first drive until later, and then he got a heavy dose from that point on. But
I guess a better way for you to phrase your question is what do you try to, you know, what personnel do you try to start off with to try to dictate what the opposition would do? And look, I mean, Steelers have had some success with two tight ends and a fullback. One tight end and a fullback at times as well too. But how many times are you actually going to use Roosevelt Nix in this game? 10, 11? Well,
I was surprised how few snaps against Kansas City Hubbard and Nix got. Hubbard got 4, I think, and Nix got 10. You know, I would have guessed more. But they played more obviously against the Dolphins. But is that, again, do you expect that kind of number this week?
from I would expect probably similar numbers from what you saw against the Patriots. I really do.
Against the Chiefs?
I mean, against the Chiefs. I do think you'll see a few some more, because like I said, I think you're gonna have to stretch the field in this game. There's going to be opportunities to stretch the field in this game as well too. So, yeah, I think you do play a little bit more 11 personnel, and I think you got to spread the football around if you're Roethlisberger. You just have to spread the football around. So, yeah, I think when we look at this, and hopefully it's not because the Steelers are down in the in the fourth quarter that we're saying, oh man, they just had to go, spread, for the entire fourth quarter because, playing from behind. So the good news is we've seen this offense have success out of 11 or out of 12 personnel, right? So they can do, they can run a successful offense out of any personnel grouping. But, obviously it's going to, a lot of it's going to be dictated. I think if you get them, and by them, the Patriots, in a situation where you can keep their smaller personnel, their nickel, their sub package on the field, I think you try to do that much as you've been trying to do, I think, at times against the Chiefs.
All right. We've gone through a lot of this. How much are you trying to blitz Tom Brady?
Not a whole hell. Well, here's the thing. I guess we have to get into semantics here, and I'm not sure we know what some of these if ESPN considers unexpected players in a four-man rush a blitz. Okay, I don't think you can traditionally blitz Tom Brady with five or more numbers a lot. I talked about this earlier in the week, David. You can't – the Steelers, there were times that they showed their hand too early against the Chiefs, and I don't think Alex Smith at times handled that well. He saw it coming. You can't do that against Tom Brady. He's going to know who you have coming, how many you have coming before the snap of the football, and he's going to beat you over the head with it. A lot of times his stats this year dictate that. The question is can you manage to send maybe three or four at times and disguise it long enough to maybe get a safety home? Even then, I kind of question that. I think for the Steelers defense to have success in this game, they're going to have success with four-man rush, traditional four-man rush. Yes, you can blitz them. Yes, they will blitz them, but I don't want to see that a lot. I hope we don't have to see that a lot because Tom Brady, I think, will rip it apart.
The Steelers did a good job of getting pressure on Alex Smith with four. That's been a goal all year long. They hadn't been able to do it until later in the year, and then they didn't. And that last drive is when they didn't get the pressure on Alex Smith. So, again, look, everybody's written about it. If you've been following the news, getting pressure up the middle is going to be the key. It'll be interesting to see. The tackles for the Patriots, you got Solder on the left side, former first-round pick. He's a solid player. And then Marcus Cannon, people in Pittsburgh love to talk about how Marcus Gilbert's underrated. Cannon's a guy, a former fifth-round pick in that same draft in 11, who's all pro this year, all pro right tackle. And so, you got the kid Conklin down in Tennessee, and you got Cannon, you got Gilbert. Those are probably the three best in the game. But it'll be interesting to see what impact Bud Dupree has. And then going back to the idea of, always pressure up the middle is better than pressure on the outside, because the quarterback can't step up in the pocket. It'll be interesting to see if they bring Dupree inside to sugar the A-gap, and then bring him, as they did against Kansas City a couple times. They showed that look with Harrison and Dupree in there, and I think we'll see more of that in this game. And then the other thing to watch for, they did this against New England the last time, is to, Tom Brady likes to make all the calls at the line. He'll be up there. He's going to make calls. He's going to identify the mic. You don't see Ben spend a lot of time at the line of scrimmage identifying the mic linebacker. He'll do it now and then. But, Pouncey's making line calls. Brady's going to make all these line calls. And on almost every play, he'll be calling out the mic. And watch for the Steelers to move late in their scheme to try and maybe flip things around. And this is when, you know, you line up in the A gaps and go outside or vice versa to do different things that may impact the Patriots line calls. Because if, and Brady's been around enough that this isn't going to happen frequently, but if you can do it once or twice and you screw up the protection, well, obviously if a guy gets home, those can be difference making plays. So just something to watch for in terms of how the Steelers lined up defensively. And again, not always easy to see on the television view. But if they move guys late after the Patriots make some of these calls, they've done it in the past. I think they'll try to do it again.
Well, you look at that game against the Texans, and everybody wants to say, well, you know, the crack in the armor for the Patriots, the Texans exposed that for the Steelers up the middle, yada yada yada.
Yeah, if we can trade for Whitney Mercilus tomorrow, that'd be good.
You know, Dante Scarnecchia, the Patriots offensive line coach, he's like the Dick LeBeau of kind of offensive line coaches, right? You think he ain't gonna sew that crap up in a hurry? You know, this week, I mean, are you really think you're gonna beat the Patriots at something 2 weeks in a row? I would be surprised. I think this is going to have to be. You know, you just try to disguise the best you can at how and where the four are coming from, and occasionally five. You got to collapse that pocket. Generally, Tom Brady's not a guy that you worry about rolling out and escaping the pocket. You just have to. Although, remember, what were we talking about a few times?
He killed the Steelers. What, three first down runs? Three runs to get first downs in that game?
Right.
Short scrambles in week seven.
And when you look at the third down conversions in that game, what were they, 7 of 12? What happens if you take away two of those third down conversions, you know, three of those third down conversions in that game? Remember, too, that there were some drops in that game, right?
Don't have it off the top of my head.
Don't you remember us talking about, boy, you know, Patriots are doing the Steelers a favor? Didn't James White drop one and Edelman drop?
Edelman dropped one over the middle where he would have run forever.
Dropped one and then Brady, you know, they tried to give us a few a couple times, but Brady scampered for the first down and wasn't another one off of a penalty or something like that. So. Yeah, I mean, the worst thing that we can do talking about this game again is talking about the Patriots converting 60% of their third downs and two or three of them being because of Tom Brady with his legs. You know, that obviously should not happen. You got to keep the Patriots, in my opinion, under 50%. On third down, and ideally under 40%. But what's, I mean, unless he gets that flu bug, running around in the first half or whatnot, you know, I think you're going to be doing good to keep him right around 40%. This is a Tom Brady, David, that's only attempted seven deep passes down the middle of the field post Gronkowski. So, you know,
they are throwing the ball a little bit. They are throwing deeper than they usually are, right? Of late.
Yeah, that they are, and what scares you is that post wheel combination. That scares the hell. I hope to God we're not talking about an explosive play, post wheel, in this game. We shouldn't be, because we've seen enough of it on tape to identify it. I view this game. When talking about the Pats on offense, as Julian Edelman's going to get his, much in the same way as Odell Beckham Jr. got his, much in the way that Jarvis Landry got his in these games, you know, a few weeks ago. It's okay for Edelman to catch 9 or 10 balls for 100 yards on you, as long as he's not doing anything after the catch with it, and as long as all of those don't go for a touchdown in this game. Let him have his. Just tackle the damn catch. Keep him out of the end zone. It then becomes a question of where Tom Brady goes and can do with his other 10 completions in this game. We know four of them are not going to go to Rob Gronkowski this time, right? So let Bennett have two or three of his. Bennett has not been an explosive play guy. Let him have his. So we've already whittled the completions down to about six, right? So what can you do on these other six Tom Brady pass completions that don't kill you, assuming you do your job against Julian Edelman? You can't let these running backs kill you for these wheels and stuff like that. And Amendola could be a big X factor for them. You know, they don't use him a lot. Michael Floyd could be an X factor. Between Floyd, Amendola, and James White out of the backfield, those guys could end up being the guys that we end up saying, "Damn, you know, if they would have held those guys down, you know, the Steelers would have held them under 23 points or whatever." So I'm saying, look, you're not going to go into the game saying you're going to shut down Edelman, right? I mean, he's going to get – how many catches is Edelman going to have? And how many
You're not going to shut down Antonio Brown. And I'm sure they'd like – you know, they'd be happy if Antonio had 7 catches for 90 yards, none over 25, and no touchdowns.
Absolutely. How many do you think Edelman get – you know, how many do you think Edelman gets in this game?
9 for $120.
That might be
too much.
Yeah, that might be the 20 too much, right?
Right, right.
I mean, I'm okay with 9 for 100 just out of the end zone. But if you're telling me, 9, 10 for $120, how many touchdowns? One?
You know, somebody's got to score for them. And I wouldn't be surprised if Edelman gets one, yeah.
That explosive play – and that touchdown, that might be the difference in the game there. So I think it comes down to about 7 attempts by Tom Brady. What can he do in those 7 attempts? And make no mistake, you know, they did a good job against these wide receivers the first time around. The problem is, here's the explosive plays. Tom Brady passed deep left. Rob Gronkowski pushed out of bounds at Steelers 5 for 37 yards. That's a double explosive play, almost. Tom Brady passed deep middle to Rob Gronkowski for 36 yards, a touchdown. How killer were those? And then the LeGarrette Blount left tackle for 25 yards. We damn sure better not see a running back run the football for more than 10 yards in this game, because that's just serving up freebies right there, if you ask me. So, you know, they held them to technically 3 explosive plays in that last game, 4 if you consider the pass short right to Chris Hogan that Artie Burns decided to go Hulk Hogan on, right? Remember that one? That was the question. Well, he picked Hogan up and threw him down, right? And he got 15 yards, right? Well, that pass was only to Chris Hogan to the right. It was only for 13 yards. Well, you throw in 15-yard penalty on that, like it or not, folks, that's an explosive play. That's a 28-yard play in one snap with a football. You know, Can they limit these overall explosive plays? You know, and double explosive plays. You're not going to have to deal with Gronk this time. So, Dave, the more and more I get into this game, I know it sounds kind of funny, but, I mean, if this defense can play a smidge better than they did the first time around, then it's going to be up to the offense, Steelers offense, I think.
Yeah, well, I don't think – you know, look, here's the story. This is the story we've had against the Patriots every time they've played them, whether it be regular season – obviously, it has been regular season because they haven't played them in the playoffs in 12 years, as we opened the show with. And it's the story about these Steelers. It's an improving defense. Can they improve against a great quarterback? They haven't seen a great quarterback in a long time. I mean, look, they saw Dalton and Flacco down the stretch. They're, you know, whatever you think of those guys, I'm not going to change your opinion now. They've been kind of average quarterbacks this year without kind of the weapons. You know, they played Alex Smith and Matt Moore in the playoffs, not exactly two of the best guys. You look at the Patriots, and I mentioned this the other day, they have played nobody all year long. They've played two good quarterbacks. They played Carson Palmer early in the season without Brady in a game that the Arizona missed a field goal to win, and Russell Wilson went up there and threw for 346 or something and three touchdowns in New England, and that was one of their two losses, their only loss with Brady. They have played the Brock Osweilers, the Tyrod Taylors, the Matt Moores, the Ryan Fitzpatricks, all season long. And, you know, they haven't faced Matt Ryan or Aaron Rodgers or – and they're, you know, Drew Brees or whomever. Pick your seven or eight best quarterbacks in the NFL. They haven't played them other than Wilson, who's had a season a little bit like Ben. He's been erratic. So, to me, I mean, look, it's straightforward. The defense has to at least contain Brady, as you say, and limit the explosive plays. The offense has to put up 20-plus points. I mean, they're not going to win this game scoring 20 points. You know, whatever you think the score is going to be, the Steelers' offense has to be better than it's been. It has to be better than it's been against Miami. They were great in those reopening drives, and maybe you can say the game was over so it didn't matter. But this offense has not kind of gone out there and hummed for four quarters all season long. They're going to need to do some of that in this game, I think. So, Dave, let me give you the mortgage process can sometimes be more challenging than, as we said, scoring in the red zone in Kansas City, and hopefully that changes in New England. I feel like New Zealand. Let Craig Oxane guide you through this sometimes daunting mortgage process to help you score the home of your dreams, even in New England.
I thought we were going to have to do an Australian rules podcast. Yeah,
we might be on Tuesday if things don't go well. If you're considering buying or refinancing a home now or in the future, please give our sponsor, Craig Oxane, a call. He's an experienced, nationally recognized lender that can help you achieve the dream of home ownership. Call Craig today at 855-961-7763. That's 855-961-7763. Email Craig at craig@blackandgoldlending.com or apply online at www.blackandgoldlending.com. First Advantage Mortgage Company, NMLS 2551, NMLS 320399. Illinois residential mortgage licensee, equal housing lender.
It would be welcome to the Ye Old Terrible podcast with David O'Todd and David O'Brien. You know,
hey mate, get a Foster's and have a podcast.
Yeah, throw another shrimp on the Barbie.
All right, who you got? Atlanta, Green Bay, Atlanta. I think I'm up one still. We both went 3-1. We're down to the brass tacks here. I'll let you know. I'll pick first here since I'm in the lead. Atlanta -4 at home. Give me the Falcons.
Yeah, I mean, look, that pass defense of Green. The stats say that there's absolutely no way Green Bay can prevent themselves from being blown out in this game. And a blowout to Aaron Rodgers is what? 9 points? 8 points? 9 points?
Yeah. You have 10 points is a blowout in any.
If Green Bay and Aaron Rodgers can win this game, and they can, I mean, you're talking about a great quarterback. That Atlanta offense is so dynamic, David. A couple of backs in there can do it all. Why? Julio Jones might have 270 yards receiving in this game. I mean, that's how lopsided this is. So you're showing what line on this? 4 or 5?
4. I'm using.
Yeah, I'll lay that 4 all day long.
Okay, here we are. You want to go first or second?
No, I'll go second. You're up first.
All right. Well, you were the bad guy last week. I guess I'll at least share the hat with you. Or I'm going to unfortunately pick the Patriots in this game, and I've had trouble thinking about what the score will be. And it's a little bit of the show me thing. And the Steelers have not shown me that they can stop Tom Brady and this offense really at any point. And I read you the stats of Brady against Tomlin. I mean, it's not kind of throwing darts here. When you say that a guy in his career against the Steelers has done what Tom Brady's done against the Steelers, 19 touchdowns, 0 interceptions, 127.5 passer rating. I mean, those are impressive things. And if you're, you know, generally, if you're going to let history be your guide, as much as I love where the Steelers defense is going, and I think they could be the best defense in the NFL next year, I'm not sure they're quite there yet. I feel like Kansas City left plays on the table, and Tom Brady and the New England offense is less likely to leave plays on the table. So me, it's kind of a question of score, 27-22, 28-27. I do think the Steelers will score some points, but again, they haven't shown that they're consistent enough. Again, letting history be my guide. Unfortunately, Ben has not been good enough on the road. He just hasn't been good enough, period, this year. So as much as I will be rooting otherwise, and as much as I don't like it, I'm going to pick the Patriots to win this game 29-27.
Boy, you just don't know the type of hate mail. You better stay off the Twitter machine. they're gonna grill you. I think I'm gonna be the good guy this week, David. I've watched a lot, a lot of tape on this, and I got it wrong last week. Maybe I won't get it wrong again this week. I think the magic number with the Patriots is 20. I really do. You got to hold them to 20 points or less. That's the only way I think you're going to win this football game. I think the Steelers defense can do it. What a great test! Look, this, regardless of what happens, we're going to come away from this game knowing what a good measuring stick this is for the Steelers defense. Right? Would you agree? I mean, because this is the defense we're going to see on the field next year, maybe minus one guy,
Yeah, no, this is going to be – look, we'll have – yes, we're going to know more about this Steelers defense.
Okay. I think they can do what I said they can do against Julian Edelman, 9 for 90, no touchdowns. I think they can – if they can limit these backs out of back – I think they're going to be able to do all that. I think they're going to be able to limit to Tom Brady to maybe right around 250 yards, one passing touchdown. They might get one rushing touchdown and a couple of field goals in this game. But once again, I think 20 to 21 right around in there is a magic number. I think the Steelers offense can top that number. I do. Now, if the scoreboard starts pushing up higher and goes into – what's the over-under in this game? 50?
51.
Yeah, if it gets to that number, if we're pushing the over, I don't think that's going to be good news for the Steelers. David, I think the Steelers win this one, David. I think they shock everybody. I think you're going – David, you're going to Houston. You're going to the Super Bowl. Steelers 23, Patriots 20.
Well, I sure hope you're right. If they win the toss, what do they do?
I put your defense out there, damn it.
I think that's what they will do. I feel like they should take the ball. I'm kind of hoping they lose the toss so that I think Belichick does. Oh, maybe Belichick takes the ball. Who knows?
Well, here's the thing. I don't want to risk field position early at all by a three and out, or something like that.
Right.
So, put the onus on Brady. An amped up Tom Brady. He might be a little bit too amped up. So you put him out there first and see if you can't get a three and out out of them, and Antonio Brown give you position on their side of the 50. Look, this could go either way, obviously. So I like the chances probably a little bit more than you do this week, and that's strange. I thought for sure you got to pick the Steelers in this one.
As the week went on, I got closer and closer to it. But after conversations yesterday and some work last night, just the Steelers' offense too erratic, and the defense, just Brady's level of play against the Steelers in the past. Like you said last week, I hope I'm wrong.
What score did you put on this?
29-27.
Okay,
so I got the Steelers.
So
with
you
the
got.
Points.
So I can't make up ground. I need that one game, so I'm probably going to have to wait to the Super Bowl to try to make up some ground on you here. All right,
yes, you are.
All right, folks, thanks for listening this week. As always, you can follow me on Twitter, at Steelers Depot. David's the one you want to bitch at on Twitter this week. leave me the hell alone. At David M. Todd, follow the show, at Terrible Podcast. Email the show, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. If you like what you listen to and you want to donate, this season's slowly starting to wind down. Hopefully it's got a couple more weeks in it here. Go to SteelersDepot.com and find that donate button, and you can go to PayPal and donate. All right, David, one of us will be right and one of us will be wrong, and we'll talk about it on Monday.
As always, enjoy the game, and thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.